Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, baby!
What is up, all you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between? You have joined us for a new edition of And the Podcast Will Rock. We are the show that dives into the catalog, the discography of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, Van Halen, one track at a time. I am your co-host, Mark Kammeyer. With me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, have you ever been to Florida in August?
I've never been to Florida, period. I'm from the frozen wasteland of Saskatchewan, so you'll have to tell us about Florida.
I will just tell you that in August, it is the hottest. So, you know, be cautious. If you don't do well in the heat, I don't recommend going to Florida in August. But what I do recommend is this. You know, we talk a lot on this show about the sort of things about that we're fans. We're simple fans. We're enthusiasts of this band that we talk about, Van Halen, much like our listeners. But oftentimes we have been met with the discourse of, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. Because we're not experts. Like, how dare you guys have a Van Halen podcast and not be historic experts on the band? How dare you? I mean, we have had so many emails and tweets at us about this sort of thing. And so we always feel the need to clarify on the show, hey, you know what? We're not experts, you guys. We're not. We're just fans. We're just happy fans to talk about a band we like. But every once in a while, our show gets, let's say, validated when we do have someone who is, let's say, an expert on this band. And by expert, I mean they know their stuff. They write about it. They talk about it. They interview the band. They interview people involved. And that is no exception with our guest today, Corey. Today, we have, I'll just go ahead and say, a historian, an expert on the band itself. And why do I say that? Because he's an author. He is an author of bands like Van Halen Rising, How a Southern California Backyard Party Band Saved Heavy Metal, and a book on Ted Templeman himself. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show author Greg Renoff. Greg, how are you today?
I'm fantastic after that introduction. I mean, I need that as like, I don't know, my ringtone or like, I like my motivation alarm in the morning. That's like fantastic. I appreciate that great welcome. I'm doing great and looking forward to doing this with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have Corey send that soundbite to you so you can use it anytime.
And ever since we started this show, I said, oh, it'd be so amazing if we can get like Greg Renoff on the show because he literally wrote the book on the early days of Van Halen. One of the most compelling. I read a lot of rock biographies, and usually in the rock biography, they kind of gloss over maybe the formative years of the band to get into the interesting stuff. Where this is an entire book on the formative years of the band, right. And it's just
well, that was the compelling. Interesting stuff. How could you gloss over it? That's the interesting stuff. I mean, exactly. It's all interesting, but that was like a lot of interesting stuff.
Well, and they didn't exactly have a meteoric rise in the early days either, right? They played a lot of dive bars and backyard parties before they finally caught their big break.
Yeah, that was one of the fun things about writing the book was that there was this sort of long run up from when Roth joins in 73 to the getting the deal in 77. And then they really don't, become a huge band until the middle of 78. So there was a big, basically 5 years from, they were sort of climbing. They had a record deal in 77, obviously, but it sort of become like rising stars, so to speak, nationally. They went from in 1978 when they opened for Journey, they had 30 minutes and they went on at 7:30, basically, but like the doors open and like nobody's in there playing, until a few months later they're playing at Anaheim Stadium and stealing the show. So yeah, it was a fun book to write. I appreciate the kind words, and it was that's the compelling. That was all compelling. I mean, like, can't skip over that.
Oh, gosh. Though. And one of my favorite stories was actually how David Lee Roth even got in the band, because he auditioned a couple times and the brothers rejected him outright because he couldn't sing, but he had a PA and they got sick of renting the PA from him. Is that right? So they just let him into the band so they could use the free PA?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think they also recognized that, he had a certain charisma and a certain ability to do things that Eddie couldn't do as a front man, that Eddie wasn't really cut out to sing and be a front man and play guitar. And so, there's that great moment in the book where one of Eddie's friends is kind of giving Eddie some crap about, like, you basically that you ruined your band by letting Dave in, because this guy and some a lot of their friends liked the original Mammoth better when Eddie sang, and they were like, what are you talking about, we need this guy, sort of Eddie sort of standing up for Dave and sort of telling this guy like, you you don't understand, we need this. And so I thought that was kind of the beginning of that push and pull, that sort of like, well, he may not be the perfect fit for us in terms of like a dude we want to hang out with all the time, but they recognize there's a certain thing that he brings to the table that's important for the band to be successful.
You finally kind of shed some light on the whole Gene Simmons involvement with early Van Halen, and did he really try to poach Eddie for Kiss? And I imagine we're not ever going to know the whole story, but you really shed a lot of light on that whole situation. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I think the thing is, like, at the end of the day, I don't think Eddie and Alex would have joined Kiss. And I think that's all sort of like post, retrospective look back to sort of like make for interesting stories. I mean, I think I mentioned in the book, it's possible that Gene kind of wanted them to be like his like songwriting part, these guys can write songs with me, they're so talented, maybe he thought that these guys don't get it, make it 78, maybe Gene's like thinking like, oh, they're still hanging around Pasadena, their record flopped, they could help me write songs or whatever, I could see that maybe being part of the deal. But yeah, I never personally bought that idea. And I think even Gene sort of later on, he said, like Eddie said, he wanted to join Van Halen in 1981, which is a whole nother sort of I would say less than credible idea. But the whole notion that he was trying to, that Dave thought, but I think it's real, Dave said in his book, I mean, it is real, he mentioned in his book that he thought that Gene was trying to like basically pull the brothers away from him, but I think that that was probably more paranoia on Roth's part than anything else. But yes, it's really is interesting, that whole thing about thinking about the fact that Gene couldn't get them a record deal basically in November of 76, 70, December 76. And then just a couple months later, they get the deal with Warner Brothers.
That's amazing. I wonder how much weight that guy put on after eating his words, saying, you ruined the band by adding David Lee Roth.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that was interesting too, in doing the research for the book and talking to these locals from Pasadena who kind of grew up seeing Dave and his Red Ball Jet Band and seeing Mammoth. There was definitely it was like whatever flavor you sort of like. Dave had a different sort of following at that point in time, and they were rivals. The bands were rivals. It was sort of like, oh, this band sucks. This band sucks. And it's, Dave had his own little tribe, which was smaller, but Mammoth had a bigger following. But again, understand this is like, we're talking about high school bands, but the idea that it would be like, I don't know, like well, I guess at the age of free agency, it's not quite the same thing, but like, you know, you're the most hated rival on the other team sort of joining your team. And you're just like, well, how could you do this? How could you let this person who was our, you know, basically the guy we used to make fun of, or the guy we didn't like, or the guy we thought like, they're not as good as you, or he's not as good as you guys. And now you're letting him join your band, that type of thing. But yes, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Dave proved everybody wrong. I mean, everybody.
I got to ask, Greg, as a Van Halen fan, do you have a favorite era? Is it the Sammy era? Is it the Dave era? Is it the Gary era?
Yeah, I'm a Dave guy. That's what I sort of, that was my entry point into Van Halen, was the 1984 album. I saw that tour and, you know, but I always say to people, I spent more time seeing, you know, I saw them more times with Sammy, and I obviously my sort of fandom as a high schooler into college lasted more years as, you know, through Sammy, because I didn't really, you know, I didn't discover and become a big fan of Van Halen until 1984. And so, you know, I might at least have some fun with that on Twitter, but I don't have any particular, like, you know, I'm not like a Dave of the Grave type of guy. I'm just, that's not my, you know, there are people who that's their thing. And they feel very passionate about that. And there are some people who are like, you know, I know a couple of people, I won't mention their names, who are super pro Sammy, who, you know, or like, I mean, you know, obviously like outwardly, like disdainful of Roth, and that's sort of like the other aspect of it. But, you know, and, you know, and the Gary stuff, it's funny, I was living in Boston. I was going to graduate school in 1997, 98, when Van Halen 3 hit. And I loved Without You and Heard of the Radio. I was super excited about the album coming out and stuff like that. So, so yeah, I mean, you know, there's stuff I like more than other stuff. I mean, and if you're asking me if I'm put like two albums in front of me, you can listen to this album for the next 6 months, it's going to be, you know, Fair Warning or 5150. I'm going to pick Fair Warning, but you know, it's not like I like, you know, I'm like religiously only like invested in one era.
I was going to say, the people that are, they let us know repeatedly. If we praise a Sammy song, the anti-Sammy people come out and tell us how much we suck. And then if we praise a Dave song, the anti-Dave people come out and tell us how much we suck.
This is, you know, this is a whole nother topic. We can go on this for this tangent forever. But I would just say it's very strange, because it's like, I don't think anybody, I mean, today it's still like, I guess it still goes on in the Sabbath world, but it doesn't seem like there was as much like ferocity to it, like where it's like, I'm pro Ronnie James Dio, I hate Ozzy, or, you know, vice versa. I don't spend enough time on, you know, Sabbath fans message boards or whatever, or like following Sabbath Twitter or whatever to see what the thing is. But I suspect there's a lot more generalized acceptance, like, oh, the Tony Martin album isn't my favorite, but it's not like I hate Tony Martin because he's not Ozzy or something like that. I mean, it's right. Kind of a given, right? It's like, it's just different.
Yeah,
they're pretty chill about the Black Sabbath of it all, you know, the metal fans anyway, because right. It's like, you're either going to say, yeah, you hate Ozzy, which, well, why would you say that, you know? And then, right. Or you're going to say you hate Dio, and why in the blue hell would you say that?
So, right.
You know,
right.
But of course, and Corey brings it up because we notably, myself included, I have said, though I love the Roth era, I would say if I'm picking singers, like, I've always been more of a Sammy guy, mm-hmm. just in the terms of technical singing of it all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of Sammy songs have some of them are, or at least I originally thought were better written. I've kind of come around on that as we've explored the show, and we've dove into the lyrics and a lot of the content of some of Sammy's songs. It's like, well, you got me on that one.
I was looking for a microphone. I have a magnifying glass somewhere around. I was going to be like, whenever they were examining this more closely, it doesn't quite hold the description.
It's true. But you know, I have come around on that since, and I've come around on Roth's lyrics as well. Not all of it is bop zoobity doop. You know, it's actually he's got some substantial material in there. You just have to listen for it.
Well, it's easy to forget. Not everything an individual thinks is the greatest thing ever at 16 is necessarily going to like sustain their whole life. You know, it's like, you know, there might be a nostalgia factor, but you might look back at it and go, oh yeah, maybe I didn't quite hear it the way I'm hearing it now. Something like that. So that's fine.
Very good point. So moving on though, and sort of in that vein, we have a segment on the show where we go back and we take a look at the polls. We put up a poll every week discussing the song that we just talked about, and we ask the audience, is the particular track What Dreams Are Made Of, or is the dream over? Last week, Corey, what did the poll say about the song Stay Frosty.
Yes, last week we did Stay Frosty off A Different Kind of Truth, and the poll was 82.5% What Dreams Are Made Of, 17.5% This Dream Is Over. So another one overwhelmingly positive. I'm still shocked that we get as many negative votes as we do, because Stay Frosty is, in my opinion, one of the best tracks off of A Different Kind of Truth, which is very quickly becoming one of my favorite Van Halen albums.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but, you know, it's got, you got those pro Sammy people spamming the poll.
It's got to be.
I wish, I have to see if I can find it. You guys may have seen this. There's somebody did a Photoshop like right when Different Kind of Truth came out, and it was like Sammy was holding something. I don't know. It was a CD, maybe his own CD, and he looked like, had just like a shock look on his face, and they did Photoshop A Different Kind of Truth in there. And so it's like, Sammy, I think I still have it on my Twitter. I'm sure I tweeted it. I don't know if I could find the picture again, but if you ask people, they'll remember it. It's like very, very funny. It's like this whole, this whole holy crap look on your face, like they actually did an album without me kind of look. It's very funny. So it's the Sammy people. There's your 18%.
There you go.
We thought it was the Cult of Mariana this whole time. It was just the Sammy folks. I got
the Sammy folks, yeah. Oh, but if you want, I'll go through a few of the comments here that people put on the poll.
Sure.
There's a few I would love to hear you read off.
Our good friends from the Sean Geek and Fast Fat podcast said, "Oh my God, this is so good. And that ending, damn. Give the props to Wolfie on arranging this one. He and Uncle Alex, we always hear about how much Eddie had playing with his son, or how much fun Eddie had playing with his son, but you have to believe Alex dug it as well."
I believe so.
I would too, yeah. Airhead says, "So much to love. The heaviness, hindsight after the masterpiece of the Mammoth WVH debut. You can hear Wolf's fingerprints all over this one. The complex 6/8 meter, it jumps in and out of the rhythm section throughout, and Wolf's bass on the ending. Ed solos, and yes, Dave's lyrics all get a thumbs up from Airhead 3. Kevin Brown from the Tom Petty Project. Thought musically it's probably the best song post Hagar for me. A couple of hugely problematic lyrics in it, though, that we kind of had to point out last week. Yeah. Just kind of lazy stereotyping, but an absolute banger musically. Eddie in top form." Absolutely agree with him there. Gene says, "An absolute banger, plain and simple. We'll definitely be blasting A Different Kind of Truth for the next couple of days." That's a good way to be. I tend to do
Gene
that
Simmons?
After we spin one of those.
Was that Gene Simmons?
It wasn't Gene Simmons, yeah, unfortunately.
He's a frequenter of our show, yeah.
Yeah, he loves our show. We talk about him often. Here's one that was kind of, Michael Green says, "When I first started to listen, I was like, didn't really want another Ice Cream Man too. Dave was talking instead of singing. I almost went, the dream is over, but in the end, it caught fire, and I remembered why I liked the song. So overall, it's What Dreams Are Made Of."
Well, look at that. Swayed old, nice. Michael Green.
My favorite comment comes from the account False Premise, who says, "If you voted Dream is Over, just cancel your VH fan club membership now."
There it is.
False Premise. He's a strong fan. Yeah. Shout out to False Premise. He keeps it real on Twitter.
Yep. And finally, Tom says, "We need a middle option. The Wrath of It All knocks it out of Made Of status, but Eddie, Uncle Alan Wolfie elevate it to Over." So there's kind of a middling review on that one. But
Yeah.
Those were the comments on the poll this week.
Comments on the poll, not too bad. Pretty civil. So there you are. I would say 82% of you.
I was like, delete your account. You guys are terrible.
Hey, sometimes it gets crazy.
Blocked and reported to Apple Podcasts.
One star.
We had that. We had a guy. We had like a small listenership, and then Eric Senich from the Van Halen News Desk did a story on our show.
Yeah.
And then our numbers went through the roof. Like 1 week, we were actually awesome. Top five on Apple Podcasts for music commentary. We beat Eddie Trunk, for Christ's sake. And then, but one guy said, "I don't want to blast you guys, but," and then he wrote a 3-page letter explaining how much we suck in very, very fine point detail on every single thing we ever said wrong. In like 10 episodes up to that point. So he didn't want to blast us, but then he proceeded to blast us.
Yeah. He's like,
"Did you just check your Yelp reviews?" He's like, "These guys are terrible."
Oh, he gave us a 2. He didn't go on one Yelp. Star. He gave us a 2. So
at least a 2.
You know, like when you go on Yelp and they'll say, "Is this your business or whatever? You guys are going on." He'd be like, "And you're behind the podcast with Rocky." But like, "Well, what?" like all these negative reviews.
Yeah.
Do not check our Yelp reviews, people. Don't do it.
That's where the real hate comes in.
That's right.
Yeah. Those non-rock historians, they suck.
But fortunately, fortunately, the assholes, I think, have dropped off now. They don't listen to us anymore.
Right.
And all the folks that do are in for a treat tonight, because Greg Renoff is going to elevate this show. Our 40th episode.
Not so far.
There's nowhere to go up.
Exactly.
That's right. 40 episodes. Our podcast has turned middle age. It's aging well. So with that being said, I oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Dave. With that being said, I think it's time to enter the domain of the wheel. Greg, you can confirm to the listeners that the wheel is in fact real. We still have people that aren't convinced, or maybe it's a bit, I don't know.
I think it's like Bigfoot or something like that. Like, you're going to like the sci-fi channel, be like, is the wheel real? We're going to look at tonight.
I think they just want to question our authenticity.
There's no way
they're just randomly picking songs. Like, no, there's a wheel. There it is.
You got to put the little, like, the little, you know, below me, like, Greg Renoff says the wheel is real. I mean, I saw it. It was out there. It was real. It was definitely real.
Greg believes
it was real. It was red and white and black, just like the Van Halen number, just like they said.
There it is.
Colors of Van Halen. It's real. I don't care what anyone says. Exactly.
I tell you, every guest we have that comes on the show, though, they go, we don't really spin a wheel, do we? You're going to tell me the song so I can prepare for it? I'm like, no. We really
should, should I take a picture and test it on Twitter? I'll be like, you know, like, oh, but we'll keep the mystery. That way we can, people can discredit me too.
There you go.
He's in on the conspiracy.
That's right. We roped Greg Renoff in all this. That's how far we've gone. And we'll keep going further until
that's
you
how
all
deep
believe.
The rabbit hole goals. Yeah.
Yes. To hell with the cult of Mariano. We've got like the wheel. Oh. But before we spin it, I always like to ask if there is a particular song or maybe a particular album that you want to manifest for the wheel to spin. So do you have anything in mind in particular, Greg?
I'd love something from Diver Down. And if it hits Diver Down, you know, they're going to say the wheel's not real. There's no coincidences.
I mean, look, Corey mentioned to you earlier that Eric Sinich, friend of the show, he called his shot. He called Cabo Wabo, and we spun Cabo Wabo through all. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he did, who he prayed to, or what he had to sacrifice in order to make that happen. But the wheel was nice to Eric. Maybe
I'm looking. There's something nice like 81 songs on 81. The wheel. Yep. 81. Okay. 81,
yeah.
Okay, which, how many did you guys start with?
Well, this is show 40, so I guess, Mark, do the math. You're the
okay, every single, you guys did, okay. So there are 121 songs. So you guys did a show, every song, every show, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, and if there is a an instrumental track that precedes the song that we spin, we'll play that, just, you know, for fun.
Yeah, we added on, yeah.
So we do that. All right, so something from Diver Down. Corey, do you have something in particular you want to manifest for tonight's show?
I tell you, Diver Down would be great. That's probably our least represented album so far in 39 episodes. We've only done Happy Trails off Diver Down, so we are due. But I have been jonesing for a debut album track for a long time. I really want to hear some Feel Your Love tonight. That's kind of what I'm hoping
for.
Oh, man. That would be fun. Yep, I echo your sentiments. We talked about it earlier off air. I want to hear some Van Halen 1. I think it's time. Specifically, my favorite track off that album, Ain't Talking About Love. I would not be mad about that. We've got so many hits left that we haven't spun yet. We keep going into the kind of the the sort of deep dive tracks, or you know, the wheel just wants us to get rid of Van Halen 3 right away because we just keep spinning it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Gary's in on this whole conspiracy. I'm not sure. Apologies to Gary once again, but yeah, I'm going to manifest something from Van Halen 1. So let's see what we got. So without further ado, if you guys are ready, if old Sammy back there is ready, the wheel is primed. It's going. It's ready to be spun. And we will spin as soon as Sammy says we're ready to go. Here we go.
All right. Oh. Oh, geez, we're so close. A little more, a little more, a little more. I can't wait to feel your love tonight.
Wow. You did it. You did it, Van Halen.
I called the shot.
You did it. Look at that. Feel your love tonight.
I am so happy.
How about that? That is awesome.
That is now twice. Twice in 40 episodes, somebody called the shot. Yeah.
It's This is going to be a good episode. I feel it. I feel the energy.
All right, Mark, your nice recollections on this one before we get rolling here.
Oh my God. I mean, this is one of those many tracks that I can recall just hearing on the radio ad nauseum, but never getting sick of it. I'm either taking a road trip with my parents, I'm in the back seat, they're blasting classic rock or whatever, and Van Halen comes on. Chances are you're probably going to hear about five or six other tracks from Van Halen before this one. But when this one would come on, it was fun. It was exciting. And, you know, the nice harmonies involved in this song really speak to the choir boy at heart within me. So a lot of fond memories. And it's from probably my favorite Van Halen album. So, yes, I look upon this with great fondness. How about you?
Well, I'm sure Greg can give us like the entire history of this song, because this was on the Warner Brothers demos, wasn't it, Greg?
Yeah, it was actually. This is the one that they probably wrote in late 1976. By the spring in April when they did the demo with Ted Templeman, it was on there. Yep.
Awesome. And what are your thoughts before we get started here? Fill Your Love Tonight, was that a standout on this album for you, or?
I think the whole first album is pretty much greatness from front to back. And I don't think that's like super controversial thing to say. I mean, I think it's pretty much wait till the reviews come in, universally accepted that, Van Halen 1 is one of the top debut albums among rock bands of our era. We can go through the usual suspects, Led Zeppelin 1, Appetite for Destruction, Boston, such and such. I think Van Halen's always going to be in that conversation of that, that list, if you want a top five, top 10, whatever it is. And so, when you have an album like that, there's not going to be a lot of filler on it. And this definitely is, an example of an album that, in my estimation, I mean, I guess it depends how you define filler, but really it's a front to back album. I mean, there's not like, it's not like Appetite for Destruction. You're not going to be like, You might skip songs if you want to, but you can obviously sit there and there's not like any songs that are like, this song is horrible. You're going to fucking go through it. So great album. So yeah, I love this song. I have a lot of things to say about this song as we get into it.
Awesome. So what do you say? Let's waste no more time and get into Feel Your Love Tonight from Van Halen 1, released February 10th, 1978. Real quick, I just wanted to, I love gushing about Ted Templeman in his productions. There's so much space in this track. Like everything has room to breathe and everything sounds so nice and clean. This is really just a well-mixed, well-produced album.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I listen to the song, a lot of times I hear Ted's like voice in my head of things he had said to me. One of the things he said to me the first few times we heard the song together, he's like, listen to Ed. He's like an effing metronome. He's like, how he was always on. He was just Ted was always just so amazed at how precise his meter was when he played. And talked about this riff where he was just like, it's so syncopated and it's so, it's so tight the way he played it. So that's one thing that immediately it comes to mind. But yeah, it's interesting too to think about the production here that obviously by Fair Warning, they've sort of evolved away from the guitar on one side, the bass on the other, the vocals across, and so you sort of hear have more like it's more it's less of a pan stereo separation, and so they're kind of different flavors. But yeah, I mean, I think I know after the fact I've read that Alex and Eddie were sort of like what would I say, I don't want to say disappointed, but we're expecting this album to sound more like a Led Zeppelin album when they want, like they were, I guess they were talking to, Ted and Don, and they're like, we want it to sound like Led Zeppelin 2 or something like that. And it didn't really sound like that to them, obviously, which is good, because if it sounded like Led Zeppelin 2, we'd be like, how dumb is it that they just, they tried to imitate Led Zeppelin, the mix or whatever. But I think, like you said, the sound and the production, so many things to say about it, the way, the harmonies, particularly how powerful they are when they come on in throughout the song. Obviously, the guitar sound, which is the legendary thing. But it sounds like I don't think I'm saying anything profound. It sounds like guys playing together in a room, which really it was. I mean, that was the way they recorded the basic tracks, was that Eddie, Alex, and Mike were in one room. Dave was in a vocal booth right next door, like through a piece of glass looking at them, and they played together, you know, and that's how they did the basic tracks. And so it comes through in the music. It just sounds like a group rather than sort of a, you know, an disembodied set of guys playing music together.
Yeah, it does sound very clean, as you say, Corey. And I don't know if anyone other than Ted can really capture the sort of mood and magic that you listen. When you listen to Van Halen and the quality of the recording really, really cooks, really smokes and works, Ted's usually behind it, at least so far in our journey, what we've discovered. And I don't know. I don't know if anybody else could just quite capture them the way he could. And it's no exception, even in the this debut album, it was meant to be.
So get ready for this next little background vocal fill. And I don't think I noticed this until after I finished the book, and maybe somebody said it to me or I noticed it myself. There's a very Beatlesque little flair here. When you listen to how they, I think it's this one that's coming up when they, at the end of like where they go, I'll let it play. You'll hear there's like a little Beatles thing, which, is the really the only time they do this on the album. But when you hear it, I think you'll if you think about the early Beatles songs and the way they did their harmonies, you'll hear it. I'll point again when it comes on.
Alrighty. Yep.
What do you thought about that? If you hadn't pointed it out, yeah,
I've heard the song hundreds of times. I don't recall that. That's very much a "She Loves You" from Van Halen there.
This is the part right up coming up here, where I have a very vivid memory of sitting with Ted and Ted going, listen to this. Cause he was just like, it's just so like the riff. And he means with Alex too. He means the whole thing, but he was like, it's so dead on. It's like, and then no click track. You when they recorded this record, I don't think they ever used a click track on the first six albums at all. Meaning there was nothing like, there was no, for people who don't know, I know.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You guys know, but like for people listening, maybe don't know, there's nothing in Alex's headphones or anyone else's headphones setting the tempo going tick, like a metronome going tick, 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 so they would not get off time. So it's all from the guys playing together. But this is the part coming up where Ted was just like, was amazed at how, you know, again, being a guy who made records with so many different people, how Eddie was very, very special in this sort of maybe underappreciated way with that that aspect. It's just, I only think of this because this is what Ted talked about a couple of times with me with this song and listening to it. That's what he wanted to remark on, the riff, and how Ed was so dead on it.
That's amazing. And at this point, like, the band were a pretty well old machine. Like, they were playing a lot in the years leading up to this. Do you know how, like, Feel Your Love Tonight was on those original demos? Do you know how old that song actually was?
I think they probably wrote it in 1976 in the late summer. There was a period of time right around the time they probably ran into Gene Simmons some of those songs from that demo, most of the songs from the Gene Simmons demo, I'd say, were probably a little bit older vintage. So that would have been in October, November of 76 when they were home. They wrote songs like Atomic Punk around that time. That may have been a little bit later, but Feel Your Love Tonight, that was another one that was a later vintage song. Obviously, something like Running with the Devil went back further. Ice Cream Man was something they had been doing. David done way back, and that was another one. Little Dreamer was probably another one they wrote around that time. So those would have been the songs that sort of just kind of before they met Templeman, they were sort of hitting up sort of a very, very rich period of songwriting. So I think, again, don't quote me on this, but I think that this song was probably like a fall 76 song.
Cool. I'm quoting you on that. You're the expert. You know everything.
Leave your comments in the reviews, but don't blame these guys.
Okay, Mark, you're a musician. I see you smiling there, and everything Greg said, just that metronome timing with the harmonies and everything, like,
that's what I was in my brain. I was sort of kind of putting myself into the feel of what that's like. And it's so smooth. He's so clean with the riff, like, despite the fact that it's dirty, so to speak, because it's distorted. But the way he's playing, it's not sloppy. It's not all over the place. It's very, very much mechanical without feeling like it's too robotic.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Exactly.
If you were to tell me that I might have believed that they weren't playing to a click track, but when you just flat out tell me honestly, like, there was no click track, this is just Eddie's rhythm, this is just how he is, like, I shouldn't be shocked by it at this point of during our journey with Van Halen and the way we kind of see how Eddie has evolved throughout the years in his playing, and then versus this debut album and everything. And that's just, I don't know, man, it's just amazing when you really think about having it, bear in mind that he's just doing this all from feel, and that's not easy to do, and to maintain this is the consistency that's really kind of gorgeous with the way he's playing that riff. And then you throw in the harmonies with everybody else. Big shout out to Mike with that high harmony. It's my favorite.
Oh yeah,
I love it. We love talking about it.
And yeah, and that's the other thing I would mention while we're talking about the harmonies. And those guys had such a great ability with harmonies. And one of the great stories that I was really glad to spotlight in the book is that Marshall Burrell, who ended up managing them in 1978, was the guy who called Ted Templeman. Marshall was at the time, in February 1977, booking the Whiskey. So Marshall had been an agent for William Morris and done some other stuff in the industry. He was the nephew of Milton Berle, but he was actually at the Whiskey a Go-Go. The Whiskey had reopened after being closed for a bit, and he was helping bring these bands in. And they sort of like launched this new Whiskey with punk bands and new wave bands. And, Van Halen was playing there, and he called Ted. And one of the things he said to Ted is like, you got a real aptitude with harmonies, I think you're gonna like these guys. These guys that really can sing, like, they can do some real cool singing stuff. And Ted, when came down and heard them, and that's one of the things that obviously was a good fit. You have a guy who, as a producer, who had been in a band called Harper's Bazaar, which was a sunshine pop band in the late 60s, and had, that was their specialty, he was in these groups that did these types of like three-part harmonies and sang these melodies that were quite well, like, thought out. These songs were very vocal oriented. They were very, very thought. They're not instrumental. It wasn't like an instrumental thing. It was like a vocal thing, right? And so you put these guys who already have these great vocal chops and have already kind of like worked that into their presentation, where they're singing the keyboard parts, singing the horn parts on these songs. When they do Motown songs, they, you know, that's what they're doing to sort of fill in the missing instrument. Oh, we don't have an organ, so we'll sing the organ part. Yeah. And then you put them with Ted Templeman, who already had this knack for it from working with the Doobie Brothers too. Obviously he had that long, you know, he had already had a very successful track record as a producer working with a group of the Doobies that had so many, you know, quite elaborate vocal arrangements. It was just like, you can hear this perfect fit. Like I can hear Ted sort of coming in and polishing up, being like, oh, this is great, let's do this too. And like, sort of like, you know, kind of switching some stuff up, but basically taking the what's there and sort of polishing it, which is what a producer should do.
Absolutely.
Here's something else that I never really sort of like. Maybe I should have harped on this in the Van Halen Rising, but that ship has sailed. So we'll let that stand as is. But you know, Roth had this lyrical theme that he played up. You know, like that he like you know we know Roth came from a fairly prosperous family, especially by this time his father was doing fairly well. And you know, the sort of like, I had to steal, beg and borrow and all this stuff. And in this song, it's like channeling Springsteen. He's like, you know, I've been working since 10 and 9. I'm like, I'm not sure that Dave had been up at 10 and 9 working a job. And like, you know, maybe, I'm sure he did when he was maybe in high school, or maybe had like a, you know, his job at the Staples River. I'm pretty sure in 1977 or 76, Dave was not like, oh, gotta get up, get my lunchbox, go punch the clock, you know. But it's great. It's like, that's like sort of like, you know, he's like, you know, that's what we want. We want the song that you can, the relatable song, you know. It's like,
yeah.
So the average guy who was like, you know, wants to be out with his girl and drink some beers and drive down the street and, you know, cruise and stuff and have a great time on a Friday night. This is the song. And so, you know, I tip my hat to Dave for sort of pulling that off in the song. But if you listen to it, you're like, oh yeah, you know, I've been working. It's like the sort of, you know, the average teenager, average working class guy who hears this or whatever. You're like, yeah, you know, I worked my crappy job at the gas station. Now I'm going to go pick up my girl. We're going to go ride around and drink beers and have a great time.
I guess the lyric, I finally woke up about 3:15, just didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You got to speak to the common man and the common man.
Exactly. Exactly. Just like Springsteen, you can be living in a mansion, but you got to speak to the common man.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know if I'm supposed to interject this much.
Yes.
But that's what you get from you guys.
you absolutely should.
You know, I really, it's just so damn catchy. It's so, yes. So catchy with the harmonies. And it's just like, how could you not? It's just a great pop song. It, you know, again, it's a hard rock, pop rock, whatever you want to say, heavy, you know, pop metal, whatever it is. It's just a great, great, great song. And I'll tell you the other thing that really comes to mind when I listen to this, it's just how they, you know, Don and Ted really brought Mike's little bass fills up there. Like you can hear it a couple, you know, like this album is sort of notorious for being like, there's not a lot of bass on it. Mike didn't, you know, Mike, you know, it seems like none of the guys really like at the end of the day, like loved the mix maybe. But that you can hear a couple where they, Mike does these little fills with the bass where he's sort of running up the neck at that point in time. And that, you know, it's cool to hear that for all of the sort of like, oh, you know, Mike doesn't bring much to the table except vocals and stuff like that. You can hear those little bass fills, and they highlighted in the mix. They push the faders up right there to get that to kind of come through there. Really cool.
I want to ask you this, Greg, because I've tweeted a bunch of your stuff throughout the years, and you named your book Van Halen Rising, How a Southern California Backyard Party Band Saved Heavy Metal. And I've had a bunch of dickheads on Twitter say Van Halen aren't heavy metal. We're talking about Feel Your Love Tonight being like a power pop song.
Right,
what do you
say
to the guys who say they're not a heavy metal band?
Right. So I would say anyone who says that isn't understanding the historical context and hasn't read the book. So I actually talk about that at great length. Yes, I would generically agree that Van Halen, it's not like Judas Priest. They're not like Slayer. They're not like Venom. They're not like any other like heavy metal band that want to come in that category. However, if anyone listening who's curious about this wants to go back and look at the cover of Cream magazine, look at the cover of Circus magazine, look at the cover of any of the rock magazines, look at Rolling Stone. They talk about bands like Queen, Heart, Ted Nugent, Kiss, and yes, Van Halen as heavy metal. The meaning of heavy metal has evolved over time. Slayer didn't exist in 1976, right? Exodus didn't exist in 1976. Lamb of God, Pantera did not exist when Van Halen came out. So yes, we would look back and say Van Halen is a hard rock band. Van Halen was most commonly called a heavy metal band in 1978. So that aspect of the title and that discussion I had in the book was meant to say that there was a certain sound that was seen as outdated at the time, meaning like Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Ted Nugent. There was this sense that there was a new wave of music sort of coming out of cities that was shorter songs, less guitar solos, more aggressive, drawn from the punk scene in the UK, which comes to New York, which goes to Chicago, goes to Los Angeles. And so there was a sense that this was dinosaur rock or heavy metal was dying. That's literally what the articles were written about. Heavy metal, is heavy metal dying? So that's what I would say. And so if people want to be angry about that, they should definitely, out of all the things to be angry about in 2022 in the United States, you should definitely be angry that I called the book Saved Heavy Metal instead of Saved Hard Rock. Say pop metal or whatever, or like, you know, guitar driven hard rock. I don't know what you want to call it. I don't, whatever, pop metal, you know, glam metal, hair metal. I don't know. Yeah.
all of those post Van Halen sort of metal bands that you named, your Panteras, your Lamb of Gods, would all cite Van Halen as a huge influence.
Yeah.
Of
right.
Their music. Too. Right. So it's like, why are we splitting right. hairs here?
Right. I mean, like, again, like, I don't know, like, Stranglehold is not a, like, when I listen to it, I'm not like, that's such a heavy song, right? But like the idea of like, it was just like loud guitars. It was like it was a shorthand for sort of like arena rock, like overblown yeah. hard rock music. So, or whatever, it was called heavy metal. I mean, they called Heart heavy metal, Queen. I mean, I have a cover of Cream magazine. It's heavy metal dying. It's like, you know, again, so I guess I could have called them hard rock and said like all the people in 1978 called them heavy metal. They're wrong. We need to ignore what was said at the time and just sort of focus on, you know, that's as a historian. I mean, I don't know what to say. I just, yeah. I mean, that's like a lot of people were very angry about that. They were very angry about that on Amazon reviews, Twitter, Facebook, very angry about that. And then, you know, you try to tell them and explain like, you know, I understand your point. I do understand your point. In 2020, 2016, 2015, we're not going to go around going like, you know, heavy metal is defined by Van Halen, but you know, it's okay. They didn't read the book. They want to be mad.
Exactly.
It's going to be okay, everybody.
It's probably not for some people. They're so mad.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, maybe not.
I tell you what, when I'm in the mood for some heavy metal, first I put on some Metallica, and then I'm putting on Dreamboat Annie, because nothing gets more metal than Magic Man.
Well, that's the thing. It's like really interesting, right? It's like really interesting that sort of like that was sort of like catch all, you know. And I'll say something else, like. If I wanted to, I mean, having fun with this, right? There were a number of reviews that called Van Halen a punk band in 1977. Like they were like, new wave, like sometimes punk, like from people who didn't know what, like, cause no one really knew right. what punk was. Like it was like, punk was new and it's like, they wear leather, they play loud. Okay, they're different than Devo, but we're not really sure as a reviewer how to explain that. And so like, right. It's like everyone wants to force something into a category. And like as time goes on, right, this sort of things got reconsidered or disassembled, basically. Like, yeah, again, we would have a different way of describing Heart from Van Halen. Obviously, Heart.
Right.
Obviously, Van Halen is closer to, quote unquote, heavy metal than Heart is. But there was this sort of like, it's arena rock. We don't know exactly what to call it. It's like, it's sort of like Black Sabbath, but it's not. Obviously Heart is different, but we're going to call Black Sabbath and Heart and Queen and Van Halen and Ted Nugent and Foghat heavy metal. Or, you know, again, or they sometimes would say like, oh, boogie rock, right? They would call Van Halen like warmed over boogie rock, which again, that's another term that's sort of like lost its meaning completely in 2022. But yeah. Sorry, did I go off on a rant? You might want to edit.
No, you said it perfectly. You said it and more eloquently than
the missing,
I could.
It's like the Nixon tapes. There'll be the missing 15 minutes or whatever. Like, what happened? Greg's face turned red, and then suddenly he was smiling. What happened?
That's like why that we Seth Meyers bit. To this podcast.
Yeah, it's the Seth Meyers bit where he says, and another thing, and he goes up on his rant, and then they have the crawl go up. At this point, Seth started ranting about. At this point, Greg Grunow started ranting about the meeting.
Exactly.
And why Ann Wilson is one of the greatest metal singers of all time.
She is.
She is.
She is. Well, Barracuda, I mean, pretty amazing, actually.
100%.
I have more to say.
Good.
So one of the interesting things was I got to see the tape boxes with the track sheets, which is say, you know, track two is bass, track three is guitar one, guitar two. And I got to see those for this album, which was really, really cool. There's a hand clap track, which you can kind of hear here if you listen like during the I Can't Wait, that's sort of like where like not like I Can't Wait, when Eddie's like doing a solo, there's a hand clap track, and there was a tambourine recorded, which I don't think I think it was never used. So they're just like, yeah, we trashed that idea. But like, you know, Ted is notoriously was like a percussion freak. He was always like, you know, lots of congas and like all the stuff on the Doobies records and everything. And you know, he had probably had a tambourine that they ended up tossing out. The other thing I was going to mention here is that is really cool is this is one of those songs where they played it, the take that they played, Eddie played the Robbie played the rhythm guitar, obviously, with the band, with the guys, and then later went back and overdubbed the solo. This is one of those songs that has the guitar rhythm track under it. So you can hear those like amazing chords he's playing behind it. And then he went back later and did the solo.
One of the top rhythm guitar players of all time.
I think that's right. Someone in the comments might get mad at me about that. And I think that's right. I don't think he soloed and then went back to put the chords in. I think he played the rhythm track and then overdubbed the solo. If I'm wrong, I'll take full responsibility for that one. That would be a screw up, but I think that's right.
It sounded like the riffs were still going, based on the, although it's hard to hear it because that solo just rips and it rips hard.
Yeah.
So I think
you overdubbed the solo.
Yeah.
But, and I was listening to the bass because like Greg pointed out, the bass is nice and high in the mix and a lot higher than we've heard, in a lot of early Van Halen stuff. So, Halen one, yeah, you still get, and there's some good shit in there too. And even maybe a little bit louder than Alex in the mix too. Like the drums are nice and subdued here.
Yeah. I think the thing about this record is that, you know, I kind of understand in retrospect why Alex would say like he wanted like, you know, the Four Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, like he wanted a bigger, a more powerful drum sound. This is a guy who's like lives and breathes John Bonham, and that's his like main guy. And so yeah, the drum sound on Van Halen one, I don't think is like on this one particularly. I mean, I'd have to go listen through true track by track. It's not super well defined. It's not super powerful. I mean, I think it fits with the mix of the song, and I think that I wouldn't change anything at this point. Obviously, the album sounds amazing, but like you go back and listen to it, and you go, I can understand if I was a drummer why I would like to be able to hear my kick drum a little bit more or whatever, you know.
All right. Feel Your Love Tonight from Van Halen 1. Mark Kammerer, let's start with you. Actually, you know what, for tonight, I have a feeling I know how the voting round is going to go. So on the count of three, everybody give me a thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm just going to play the clip because I think we're all in agreement here. 3, 2, 1. Oh. We had to wait on Greg there. He was really contemplating.
I was just channeling my one of my favorite guests from Twitter, that, you know, the, what's his Joaquin Phoenix. Like, yeah, it was thumbs up all the way. God, the thing I thought about at the end too is that you know, one of the Templeman's other trademarks as a producer, he did it on Blackwater with the Doobies, and it was done on his stuff with Harper's Bazaar, where you like drop all the instruments, you just have to like the way the song ends, where they just do with the harmonies there, the vocals at the end there, where there's like, that's a kind of a Templeman trademark. You know what, I never really sort of like thought about that, but like that's, yeah, that was, that's where he did that there, with sort of like, yeah, like get all the instruments gone, and then just like you just sort of like are left with that great vocal. But you know, something else Ted said, which we wrote about in the book, meaning I channeled what Ted told me, was that he really wanted Van Halen to be like, not, he wanted to be heavy at times. Like, he's like, I want it with the devil. I thought it was like, it's powerful. And he, you know, Atomic Punk had this sort of edge to it, but he really wanted the whole vibe of the album to be like upbeat. He said he wanted it to be like a sun-kissed Southern California thing, like a hard rock thing, but that was like upbeat and like positive. And like, this is like exhibit A of what he's talking about, right? It's like, again, it's like, it's heavy metal, right? But it's like it's like about having a good time. It's not about like, oh, let's go like through the atmosphere and go up to space and maybe like crash into an asteroid, or like, let's go on a crusade and get slaughtered by, you know, whatever, like, you know, like all these like heavy metal, like, you know, these sort of like dark and, you know, dreary, like sort of Sabbath-y themes, like all that stuff was sort of like, you know, cause like Running with the Devil is like about like basically like being powerful, right? But it's not like, some sort of science fiction-y sort of like, you know, oh, we're at the castle wall and we're going to like break it down and fight the orcs or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's like,
it's not Iron Maiden.
Oh, right. Right. And so this is such that when he talked about that, this is what he was referring to, this sort of like, yeah, it has the great guitar solos and it's like super great, great, powerful beat to it. But the, like the vocal harmonies and the themes that we're talking about, it's very upbeat. That's why he didn't want things like for people who know the Van Halen demo, like Voodoo Queen and some of the other stuff. He's like, it's not that he didn't think they were like, those songs had potential, but he's like, I wanted it to be heavy metal that would make you smile, basically, like, for lack of a better term, like something that would be like, oh, it's like, you know, or like, you know, something that would be not like guy-centric, for lack of a better term, maybe. Like, he wanted it to be something that would have a pop appeal to it, that would be like, you know, not something like, oh, why are you always playing that stuff about, you know, like this 12-minute song by, you know, this group, and they're like, they're harping on this stuff that I don't care about. Like, you know, this, you wanted to make it relatable and like make it very upbeat and positive.
That's great. And I'll say it right now. This is maybe my favorite outro on a Van Halen song. It's at least top five. You usually get the extended outros or the big rock concert ending with the big drums and the guitar and everything. I just love how this ends, because highlighting the harmonies, which make Van Halen one of my favorite bands of all time and world famous. You know that Van Halen sound from Eddie, from Alex, from those harmonies. So to end on that note, I thought was just note perfect.
It's we talk a lot about how we appreciate specifically Michael Anthony's work in the recordings, most especially his high harmonies. Whenever you hear those high harmonies, kids, that's him. That's more than likely him. And every time I think about a great example about Michael Anthony's harmony ability, this is the song that comes to mind. It's always this song, because the harmonies are so prominent. He is so prominent. Everybody is. I mean, everybody's right on the money. And I guess we can really give a lot of credit to Ted Templeman with that, him being sort of the vocalist producer, shall we say, you know, with his a fluency to bring that out. And I'm also a sucker for, much like you said, Greg, I love when the music drops and you get the sort of the acapella voices going in and keeping the flow going. And they don't drop. Like, the rhythm stays steady all the way through, which is without a click track, that's not easy to do. So big props to the boys in the band, big props to Ted Templeman for keeping that going. When I think about the party rock, the hits of Van Halen, it 100% has this song is in mind when I think of it, for sure. So for me and for all of us, Feel Your Love Tonight is indeed what dreams are made of in terms of the Van Halen echelon.
No, I found this kind of interesting. Sammy never, he didn't like to do a lot of raw stuff. He never did this song during his era, but Gary Cherone did in 2015. They played this, or in 1998, sorry. They played this song 37 times on the Van Halen 3 tour. I think that would have been great. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to go check that out on YouTube. Yeah, it's, you know, it's so emblematic of what Van Halen is. Actually, if you want to ask, like, this would be like, you know, like, you know, if you ask somebody, like, beyond the hits, like, if you wanted to play a song for someone to kind of explain to them what Van Halen is, this would be a very good, like, you know, probably better than a lot of the stuff on, like, maybe like a Women Children and some of the other, like, you know, like, basically, like I'd say, like, a song that's like not a, like, a top three or four song from an album, like, this is probably, like, would be one you'd want to say, this is what Van Halen is about. The harmonies, the guitar solos, the good riffs, the party lyrics, the great virtuosity from all the guys in the band, and just the upbeat feeling that you get. And yeah, not every Van Halen song does that to you, but that's definitely, this is definitely would be one you could play for people and say, oh, you know, this isn't a top 10 Van Halen song in terms of the top 10 most commonly listened to Van Halen songs, be like, this is what Van Halen's about.
It's rare when we get a full clean sweep like that, but when we do get it, I think it's rightfully just, and I think we can all agree, you included, listeners out there, that sometimes you just gotta kick back and listen to some good fun rock. And Feel Your Love Tonight is fun rock, but you don't have to take my word for it, and you don't even have to take Corey's word for it. Take it for the word for it from our guest today, freaking Greg Renoff, author extraordinaire. Greg, first of all, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for all of your contributions here. This has been enlightening and awesome. And why don't you let the people know what you got going on, and where they can find you if they want to follow your goings-ons?
I'm just cranking out the Van Halen memes as fast as I can over Twitter at Greg Renoff. That 70 sports guy is like, he's like, tough competition. I'm going to catch him eventually.
Good luck, man. He's supposed to be
shit done. He's that's one of my favorite, obviously one of my favorite accounts. Great fun. And yeah, always hilarious. Like, you know, but there is like, yeah, he's got a few like go-to Van Halen memes, which are always like, it's funny. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a comedian that tells similar jokes. So like, you kind of know where it's going to come from, but I always laugh. Like, you always know the joke's coming and you're like, always laughing. Yeah. Like, okay, here comes this. But yeah, it's great. Great account. One of my favorite follows.
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, Greg, you got any plans for a new book? And there's so much Van Halen history yet to be mined. Any thoughts of maybe doing a sequel to Van Halen Rising?
Yeah, I'll do another Van Halen book. I am contemplating the way to approach that. But yeah, I'm always messing with Van Halen stuff when I work on some my writing or research. And I have like, when I die, God knows what's going to happen to my Van Halen stuff. It's going to have to go to like, I don't know. You guys have to. Have to figure out something to do, like raffle it off on my deathbed or something like that. But I'll do another Van Halen book. It'll come.
That'd be great. If you're looking for something to take that Van Halen stuff off your hand, you know, me and Mark, you know, we'll pay for shipping even if you want. So
there you go. Yes, you heard it here, folks.
Back up the truck. You know, it's a lot of stuff.
Oh man.
We should tell people, actually, I just want to let people know, teplemanbook.com, if you want to get Van Halen Rising or the Ted Templeman book, Platinum Producer's Life in Music. I bought that on Kindle, but I'm looking here, and you can still get a version.
I can sign your Kindle, send it to me through the mail. I'll Sharpie that screen in a heartbeat. Well, <you're> like, every book I read, it's a Greg Renoff signed book. I don't know what happened. Every page.
I may just spring for the actual book, Personalized Inside by Greg Renoff. I can't wait.
Anytime. You guys awesome. Are great.
It's amazing. Corey, where can they where the people can find you, and where they can find the show and everything connected with it?
Well, they can find me at CD Morset on Twitter. They can find the show at Podcast Will Rock, and our website, www.podcastwillrock.com. We've got some merch on there. Catch up on old episodes. You can
get
write
the
to
merch,
us.
People.
Get the merch. You're going to love it. Yes. Write to us. Let us know how much we suck. And let us know how much you loved Greg Renoff on the show. And hopefully, if we get enough good comments, we can con him into coming back at some point. Because this is a real treat for me. I love it.
Anytime. Anytime. I'm happy to come back. Next Wednesday, I'll come back again. No problem.
There you go. Perfect.
There you are. Yeah. You can find me at Mark the Bat on Twitter and Instagram. Go ahead and tweet me. Tell me all about how finally we got ourselves another expert on the show, an actual historian.
Except when it comes to heavy metal, because he's wrong.
It's like You could do, yeah. You're the discourse on whether or not you feel one band is heavy metal versus another. You can send those to me because I'll just simply send you a GIF of the guy saying, okay. And I take great, great joy in things of that nature. But speaking of heavy metal, though, and all rock natures of all sorts, there are so many bands, so many great bands that are either connected to Van Halen or have some sort of connection there. And you can find some podcasts on those bands right here on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network. You name it. Your Judas Priest, your Deep Purple, your Queens, your AC/DC, it's all there. Your Tom Petty's, like, go on, check out all the awesome shows on the Deep Dive Podcast. We're there, including Corey's other shows, Backtracks and Backtracks Theme Music. Check those out. Get the numbers up. You can tweet at me if you have a problem with that, because whatever, I'll accept all angry tweets. I live for such a thing. And I also live for rocking out to some good Van Halen tunes. That's why we're here. That's why we do the show. That's why you're here to listen to us. We are, and the podcast will rock, and we will rock you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.